Welcome back to the Unending TBR podcast. On this week's episode, I have another author interview that I'm really looking forward to sharing with you. Thank you for joining me.
So I am here this week with a very special guest. I am here with Tamara Lee. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Nicole.
So I would love you to tell our listeners a brief history of how you started as a writer and how you came to write as you do now.
Well, I always loved writing in grade school and high school, and I really did want to be an author, but it seemed like a dream out of reach. And so I became a speech pathologist. And while I was working, I worked in the school district, and my husband started building his business, and he was working late at night, and I was getting home, you know, around 3:30, and we decided that we wanted to start having children, and we were kind of having trouble getting me pregnant. But my hope was, I thought, you know, it would be so nice to raise kids, you know, to be able to stay home and raise kids. And I thought, you know, what if I could take my love of writing and I could become published? And it was just a dream, but I would spend those hours between, you know, getting home from work and my husband getting home, and started writing medieval romance, which was what I was reading at the time and what I really, really loved. And I really didn't have a huge hope, but you still, you know, sometimes you still pursue a dream, even though you don't think you're going to reach it. I finished a book and I sent it off to an agent, and she shockingly called me and said, I think I can sell this. I was like, what? Really? In the end, she was able to get me a 4-book contract with Bantam, and this was in the general market. And wonderfully, the same day that I was offered a contract, a couple hours later, my physician called and said, this time you really are pregnant.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was like, okay. I was just kind of exploring Christianity at that time. My husband and I both were. And so I knew there was some, not really a good fit for writing in the general market, because it includes love scenes, you know, the books that you write. But I pursued that and wrote 7 books with HarperCollins and Bantam and Dorchester. And as I was doing that over the course of, you know, I guess it was about 6 or 7 years, I was growing in my faith, and I had people saying, you know, when are you going to start writing for the Christian market? And I was like, I don't know, I'm doing well in this. I'm succeeding, and I know that I need to. I'm feeling that pull. And I think what really moved me, I know what really moved me was my 6th book. It had elements of the Black Death in it, and I had a big conversion scene, and I had what was very true for the medieval time period, a lot of faith involved in that, because there were so many people dying around my hero and heroine. And my editor came back and she said, we are wasting trees on Christianity here. She's like, you need to cut 30,000 words from this book. And I was like, what? She's like, cut that out, and we want a love scene somewhere in there instead. So I knew, I was like, okay, God, I hear you. So it still took me another a couple more books before I finally said, okay, yeah, you're right. Okay. So that was, you know, my first book came out in 1994 with Bantam. And then in 2005, I made the leap. I was like, I know I'm going to lose a lot of my readers, because they're love scene readers, they're general market readers. And so I came into, got a Christian agent, and he was pretty sure he could get my medievals into the market, and we had lots of interest. But in the end, they came back and said, oh no, they will never sell. They'd not had good experience with them. I was like, okay. And then they said, can you give us something different? And I was like, well, I have this one story I wrote when I decided I was done writing. And a couple weeks later, I thought, well, I got to do something. And it was a contemporary one, just something different. And so I kind of polished that up and sent that off. And that was my first contemporary Christian romance that was released, called Stealing Ada. And I had another over the course of how many years? 5 years, had, you know, a total of 7 inspirational contemporary romances. And I was told at the time, hey, get your foot in the door with these contemporary ones, and chances are we'll be able to then get you back into your medieval romances, which is what your love is. And I was like, okay. So in 2011, I told my publisher I'd really like to go back to medieval romances, and that was my passion. And they were not interested. I had the foot in the door, but it wasn't in far enough, I guess. So, and it was, again, the agent shopped the proposals around, which became the Age of Faith series. Mm-hmm. And interest, but in the end, no, these won't sell. So in 2012, I was like, I'm going out on my own. This indie thing, I'm going to give it a try. So that's how I got where I am now. And now, 9 years later, after going indie, I've never been happier as a writer. It's a lot of work, mm-hmm. but I'm writing what I want to write when I want to write. And I don't know, it's been a blessing.
Well, it's, hey, coming from me as a consumer, I'm sure glad that you did that. For those of who have followed you or don't know, one of your trademarks that you show us on your social media page is how you write your first draft by hand. Why is that a part of your process?
Well, when I was first writing for the general market, I kind of did mostly by computer and some in hand. And then I'd say about the time I went indie, I started having a difficult time composing on the computer. Maybe it was just age. And I'm a perfectionist, and I get hung up on things. And I was finding myself spending a lot of time writing the perfect one page in the time I could have written 4 or 5 imperfect pages. And it was just something that I was struggling with emotionally, internally. And I was like, you know, let's try pen and paper again and see if we can do that. And I found myself being able to write 4 and 5 times as much, even though you need lots of editing and lots of work. I was just more productive with it. And it's because, you know, you have to put the editor away when there's only so much margins to write around the edges, and you go, oh no, I'll never make sense of this with all the arrows. So that was the reason. And it's also very easy to go anywhere with pen and paper. So you can write anywhere. But I will tell you that the 7th book in the Age of Conquest series, Lawless, about half of that I wrote by hand and half by computer. Yeah, it was shocking. It was just kind of, I typed things in, and just after I typed it in and edited what I'd written the day before, I just kept going. And it's like, oh my gosh. And then amazingly, this last book, Dauntless, that just came out today, I wrote about 90% of that on the computer.
Wow.
I know. So it's like, okay, it's flowing again. I was like, that's good, because as long as I can write and flow on the computer, perfect, because then I don't have that time of spending typing it all in. But then I started the next series and I'm doing a lot more handwriting again. So it's like, what makes it work. So.
And it works for everybody differently and probably at different times. Like, you just have to go where you're creative outlet can take you, right?
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, I will dictate on the way home into my little notes on my iPhone. I'll just hit the little button. It's just like, okay. So, you know, just kind of using up that time and come home and then type that in. So, yeah.
That's awesome. So you're saying your love being a self-published author now for a few years. How do you feel like self-publishing has really influenced like readers and writers in the market?
Well, I think it's given writers the freedom to go beyond the boundaries traditional publishers set, as is my own personal experience with them saying, no, you're not going to be able to make these books work in the inspirational market and proving I could, and being able to write what I wanted to write. So I think it's opened up doors for whether your author is strictly indie or they're hybrid, where they're writing for a traditional publisher as well as writing on their own. I think it gives them, well, you know, most writers, even, you know, ones who've been published a long time, if their family needs two incomes, they're usually still got their day job and writing whenever they can squeeze it in. So I think for a lot who are, you know, established, that it's enabling them to devote all their work time to the writing career, you know, being able to give up that day job, because now they have, they're able to develop the indie side while, if they're hybrid, while they're working, you know, for a traditional publisher as well. So I think that's, I don't know, I think that's the biggest thing. So, and as for readers, I think it's given readers a lot more choice in things to read. I mean, there are so many more books out right now, and it's brought the cost down. When you don't really have a middleman, you know, your indie author can sell something for $4.99 that the traditional publisher is trying to get an ebook for $15.99. And so that also helps your indie author to grab readers who go, I don't want to pay 15. If this is as good, I'm going to pay $5 for a good read. So, yeah.
I know, it's been amazing. I remember like my earliest thing of like downloading my first ebook on my iPod. I had an iPod Touch. Oh. It was just like the world at your fingertips. So, because you right now mainly books set in the Middle Ages, medieval fiction, how much research do you do before going into a specific time period? And what resources have been the most helpful for you?
Well, having been writing, you know, medieval books, romances for, gosh, 20 some years, I do have a pretty good foundation now. But usually, you know, when I do, like starting the new series that I am, that's when I'm going to do my most intense research, because I want to make sure I have everything historically accurate, and that if I am bending some history, that it's acceptable, that it's not too far over the line. So really at the beginning of series, it is pretty intense. I'm listening to a great 16-18 hour audiobook about the Hundred Years' War, which is where the 14th century, where this new series is set. I've listened to it like 3 times in the last couple months, and then a 10 hour one on the Black Prince. And then I also have the books that I'm reading front to back and marking up. So in the beginning, the foundation, that's the greatest research. And then from there on, it's ongoing. You know, like, you know, I'll hit a scene and I'll go, okay, which forest would they be in at this time? Was it still called Nottingham, or did they change that? Or could they hunt in that? Or were they going to be hung if they were caught hunting? So, you know, you start pulling out your books and go, yeah, I don't want a reader to go, they couldn't do that. So, I know.
Yeah, picky. I mean, well, and I felt also, I don't know if it's, but it's like, I feel like Age of Conquest was very, I don't know if it's just because you had William the Conqueror, like as a very central character throughout the series, but it's like, it did feel even like I learned more history. I don't know. It felt very history rich. So that was a really fun thing, because I felt like, oh, I haven't read much in that time period. So that was really fun to discover.
I love using all the major events throughout those the first 7 of the 8 books, just, you know, kind of just slotting it with the characters and going, you know, I want to do, you know, the siege of the Isle of Ely, and, you know, how am I going to work that in? And it was so fun. And I've always loved myself learning history from the fiction side, where the writer has brought in the history to make it interesting for you, so it's not dry. So I hope I succeeded.
I really think that you did, because I feel like also, and I've mentioned this before, it's like I can remember history way more if I'm like living it out alongside a fictional character. If I'm just reading a list of dates and so-and-so did this, it's like there isn't that context that's held me that makes me remember. So
yeah,
I love that. So have you ever come across with like a just a random tidbit of history that has surprised you?
I think what surprised me is this one particular book, the you know, long audiobook and the accompanying paperback I'm reading, that it's by Ian Mortimer, and it's about King Edward III, the perfect king. And history has shown that his father, Edward II, which you might remember from the movie Braveheart. There was Edward I, who was the really rough and tough dad. And then there was his kind of feminine son who just wanted to just do art and, you know, just was not warring, although he was quite brave. But history has recorded him as being murdered when Edward III was like, I don't know, maybe he was like 18 or 19. But this historian, and he's pretty well known and well regarded, he's been able to tease out all by doing deep research a lot of proof that King Edward II, who was supposedly murdered, was not, that he was simply taken off the throne and removed because he was such a bad king, and that the church, you know, the Catholic Church was involved in hiding him away. And so I find that fascinating. I guess it's actually more than a tidbit, but it's tempting me. It's tempting me. I'm going, maybe I should work this in. He's the only one that's really addressed this thing. And I'm like, oh, this is fascinating. So I don't know. It's fun.
That is fun. I was just having a conversation with my brother, and we came across this part in American history, and they go, oh, died under mysterious circumstances. And he goes, well, that would be like free real estate for an author.
Yes.
You could build a whole scenario around anything that's supposedly mysterious and
you
don't really know.
Well, that may happen with this new series. I'm so tempted. We'll see.
Okay. So before we move on to what the new series is about, let's talk about how you have, just today, as this is being recorded, the last of the Age of Conquest series has come out. So what gave you the idea of wrapping up the Age of Conquest series with origin stories of that significant family that you've introduced us from the beginning of it?
You know, when I was writing, you know, starting this whole series, I knew I was pretty solid on six of the eight books, who those would be, you know, who would be featured as the hero and heroine in those. I was pretty sure on that. I was a little loose on the seventh one, which ended up being Sergei's story from, you know, previous book, you know, secondary character. And I had several candidates for the eighth one, but I think it was around Reckless, the fifth book, when I was writing Nicola's story, that it occurred to me that her parents had a great love story, because being mostly a seat of the pants writer, I kind of had built up their story through each of the first five books, just giving tidbits. And I go, why would Nicola be this way? And well, maybe because her parents were this way. And then, you know, I kind of build on that and give tidbits there. And I think it was around that time that I was like, you know, my gosh, it's kind of odd to have Age of Faith series in 12th century. And then you go back to do an origin story in the 11th century of how they came to be. And now I'm thinking about stepping back one more time. I was like, oh, why not? Just do it. And so, and actually I had had a lovely coffee chat with my friend, reader friend, Patty. And I told her kind of the things I was thinking about and possibly doing this. And she was like, oh yeah, you got to do it. You got to do it. And she started sending me pictures of silver foxes, you know, what she called silver foxes. I was like, what's a silver fox? I learned. So I was like, you know, you're right. Anyway, so she encouraged me, and away it went. So
that is so interesting. I know, it's like when I heard that you were doing that story, because especially in Nameless, that their story, you know, quite a bit is revealed in the third book, Nameless. And I'm like, wow, that's going to be an interesting book to tackle. Like, I always love it. It's like, they're never cookie cutter, but this is like something that's really
Oh, thank you.
Different. And so what was a challenge for you in writing this one?
The challenge was the timeline, because of the way that I built up the story before I even thought about making Godfrey and Robin have their own tale. I had so much happening in their life over the course of a very long time that, you know, most of my hero and heroine within a year, we've gone from stranger or enemies to in love. And I realized that, you know, from all these things I tossed out, and I started reading through my books and go, oh, let's make sure you don't forget to cover this, because you said this happened in Fearless. And I discovered that, you know, this is a long timeline. This is not going to just be something that happened over a year. This is huge because of all the things that I've dropped. And so the biggest challenge was the timeline. And I've never written one that covered that many years. And so that's why the book is divided into five parts, just so that, and that was one of the ways I dealt with it, because I was afraid I was going to jolt readers just going chapter to chapter and then going, oh, wait, she's now, you know, 3 years later or whatever. And I'm like, ah. So by doing it, the parts that, you know, in part 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, it alerted readers that, okay, we're doing a jump in time. And so that was a challenge, but I think I fit everything in. I had all these little notes and arrows and stuff. And another challenge was the hero's disability, the loss of the use of his legs, and did a lot of research on how, you know, currently, you know, people who've lost the use of their legs are able to get around, and tried to fit that to a medieval time period and make it realistic. And I think I did it. We'll see.
Yeah, well, that is going to be definitely an interesting part to read. I know, I like just dropped on the Kindle and it's like, I need to get it. So what do you feel like is a main theme of Dauntless?
I think there are several. Forgiveness and grace. Trust, which is something my hero deals with, that it's very hard for him to be vulnerable, you know, being this warrior that was from day one brought up to, you know, to fight. But I do think in terms of the romance is from my heroine's, the stand that she has to take, the theme for her was really loving when you're not loved in return, and how easy it is to just pull back, and how she struggles not to love this hero who won't love her. And she tells herself, I'm going to stop loving him. It hurts too much when he doesn't love me. And so that was a big thing, you know, for her and it's something that I think we all deal with, you know, whether it's with kids or significant others, when you don't feel like you're getting the love that you want. And it's like, you will fine. I'm just not going to pay any attention to you. So, I think that's the main things that go on.
Yeah, that's something that it's pretty, I can imagine it'd be pretty tough to tackle too.
Yeah.
So how does it feel finishing one series and like beginning another? You gave us a teaser in, goodness, was it Heartless?
Heartless. Yep.
About where you're going. So how does that feel? Switch? Do you have to like really switch gears once you finish?
On one end of it, it feels absolutely wonderful. It's just like, okay, the baby is out in the world, and you know, now I can turn creativity to something new. But it's also a bit depressing. it almost feels like I'm leaving my family, and I'm never going to get to visit them again except through letters or memories. It's like, oh, I miss Godfrey, I miss Ruby. So it's great and a little depressing, but I'll get over it. And that's why I always try to, as soon as I can, jump into a new story, because it's kind of the same when you move from one book to another in a series. It's, you know, you're leaving behind these two that you've spent so much time with, and it's like, you know, bye. And then, but you know, you also get to have them show up in other books when you're staying in the series. So that helps.
And I love the little like the little nuggets that you have that connect the series, that's just so special, because it just feels like then that you have that little piece.
Yeah.
Still, yeah.
I'm clinging to them. Can't let go.
Oh, that is something. I know, and I remember telling somebody, I'm like, oh, about your books, and they're like, you know, because usually in traditionally published, you don't have long-running series, and they're like, there's 8 books in this series, and I'm like, believe me, it does not feel like 8. Like, I mean, you're like, yes, there's another one.
That makes me feel good. Thank you.
That is my opinion, that it's awesome. So can you tell us about this upcoming new series? You've given us a little teaser. So what has you excited about this new series?
Well, it's called The Age of Honor, and it's set in 14th century during the Hundred Years' War, when King Edward III reigned. And that it's the war between England and France, where England, it was struggling to hold on to its French lands, Normandy, Aquitaine, which was handed down, given to them by their ancestor, William the Conqueror. And the French kings being, the war is the French kings have decided, you know, you got your own little kingdom over there and we're going to take these over. And of course, you know, William the Conqueror's ancestors are not too thrilled having their possessions taken from them. So, and I think if I remember right, they actually call it, it wasn't called the Hundred Years' War until 16th, 17th century, something like that. So, yeah, and it actually lasted like 140 years, off and on fighting between them. But in the end, France got it all. But yeah, so that's the new series, and it is a continuation of the Wolfrith family. So I can't help but it's my one way to stay connected to my favorite characters. So yeah, we're going to show you 300 years after, you know, the, you know, Age of Conquest, you know, and through the past the Age of Faith series, how the Wolfriths are doing in the 1300s.
That is so, I mean, hey. That's awesome to me. Anytime there's a Wolfrith slightly connected.
Thank you.
It's a great time. So what do you feel coming into this? What do you feel like is an essential part of crafting these characters that are going to live out in this time?
I'm kind of a people watcher. So I pick up on things, and I think I'm really good at body language. And so I know when to back off with someone typically kind of thing, or I'm kind of like, won't you please back off with me? I think that helps me, you know, craft my characters. You know, when I see things and I kind of internalize different things that, you know, how I see people react to things, my own personal experiences. And, I think one of the biggest things is finding the right character flaws that make a character relatable and realistic. Because I know, you know, when I was first thinking about writing for the inspirational market, while I was still writing for the general market, I started reading some of the romances that were released in the 90s. And that was one of the big reasons why I was like, I don't think I can do this, because they're all so perfect and goody two shoes. And so, I don't know. I think it's great to have flaws, because I know when I read books, if I read about a hero or heroine that's struggling with the same thing that I am, that book becomes a movie to me. I feel like I'm living it, because I'm like, oh, they understand what I'm going through. So that's pretty essential for me. So
I love that too. And I feel like it's even stronger than that. It's like, I've even been able to, you can explore what it would feel like with somebody who has different struggles as well. And that's like mm-hmm. as a reader, I find that that's incredibly helpful just in daily life, because it's like, you know, you can see it through a different lens. I love yeah. that.
Very
Absolutely
true.
Love that. So how do you come up with character and family? I mean, I have a hard enough time naming my dog. So you have like, how do you draw out like names, especially like in these time, like to make them fit the time period?
I do. I have a book that I've been using since the 90s called Medieval Character Names. And the names were taken from roles, you know, in the archives and telling, you know, this name was in use, you know, and 1101 in this person in Derbyshire, it was, you know, it gives you some history on them. So that's one of my starting points. And of course the internet has broadened that. And, you know, sometimes I'll fudge, even though I'll look up a name and I want to use a name and I'll find, oh gosh, the first known instance of that was the, you know, 1400s. And I'm trying to use it in the 1200s. I'm going, oh, at a time or two, I have fudged, you know, like, because I tell myself, well, just because it wasn't written down doesn't mean it wasn't used 200 years before.
And it was like, it just was used, but nobody was in the census important enough to be recorded, right?
Exactly. But you know, there are times when I can't find, you know, I'll look at my list and I cannot find like the right name and for someone. And that happened with in Fearless, Hawisa. I wanted to use her name so much, Hawisa, because did fit the time period. And her name means battle or combat. And here she is, the mother of the Wulfriths, basically, you know, the matriarch. But I kind of was going, are people going to like this? Because it's not your feminine name. And it's very rare, although it was fairly common during that time period, because I'd never heard of it before, you know. And so I just kind of was like, you know, I'm going with it. So I don't know. I love when I do research and I find out a name I want to use fits the person based on what the meaning was. I was like, okay, that's it. So Vitalis.
I love that. I love it that it's like that the meaning.
Yeah.
Something too. That's just another part of their character. I love that.
Well, there have been times when I wanted to use a name and when I looked up the meaning, I was like, nope. It is not. I don't want my hero being someone who cleans out gutters. You know, so, like, no, okay, somebody looks it up, even though it's a cool name.
So. Sounds good, but it wouldn't have been good in the context. That's funny. So after, like, what do you do to recharge your creativity?
A good book, and that can include a research book if it's really well written and it's entertaining. It just kind of sparks creativity for me, and I go, oh, look at how this, you know, this true historical character handled this, or you know, this situation, this plot, you know, a good movie, you know, kind of like, you know, if I put in one of my, well, Ever After, I love Ever After. I'll put that in sometimes, like, okay. Romance. Other ways, long drives. Whenever you're just driving along, my imagination will take off and I'll just hit my little notes thing and start getting down ideas. And then, believe it or not, insomnia. When I can't sleep at night, and I used to really have trouble with it, but there's sometimes that you just can't get to sleep. And so how I try to put myself to sleep is by plotting and trying and thinking of the scene I'm trying to write and how to get around it. And a lot of times I'll figure out, so I'm ready to write. And then the next morning, it's almost like it helps me get to sleep, because my mind goes, oh, you're making use of this time. I'll just go to sleep. And then you have to figure this out in the morning. I know, crazy.
That's so funny. So do you don't keep it? You have to rethink.
Weirdo.
Oh my goodness, that's funny. You trick your brain.
Yes.
By trying to be productive. That's an interesting concept.
I'm going to use the time. If I've got to lay there wide awake, I'm going to use the time.
Oh, that is awesome. I love that. So where can our listeners follow you and find you and keep up with your releases on social media, or what other platforms are you on?
I mostly stick with Facebook and Instagram, and you can find me Tamara Lee Author. If one who comes up writes medievals, that's me. and then my website, www.tamaralee.com.
That is awesome. And yeah, so excited about all the things coming.
Thank you once again for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I sure had a great time recording it, and I'll talk to you next time.